Welcome to our second day of the seminar on 24 Gurus. Yesterday we had heard from five gurus. From the earth we learned tolerance, and also from the tree we learned tolerance. From the mountain and the tree we learned selfless service. From the air we learned, from the prana we learned to be regulated, and from the wind to be unattached to objects, and also to be unattached to the different bodies we travel through, like the wind. And from the sky we learn to be the observer. So we had some homework that... Did anybody try to apply the lesson of the earth today? Tolerance. Yes. What did you do? Oh, he has to say. Would he like to share with us the example? If he doesn't have to, but if he wants to.
The earth carries everything.
Okay.
Association of devotees carries the devotees in Krishna consciousness.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? As the earth carries everything, so association of devotees carries the devotees through Krishna consciousness. Nice, very good. Anybody else think about the earth today? Or the mountain?
Water.
Anybody think about the mountain? Yes.
I was thinking this because we were talking yesterday about this, what's the difference between mountain and tree.
Tree.
And then tree is over, mountain is not.
Right.
Like steady.
Mountain is steady. We should be steady as a mountain in our Krishna consciousness. Very good. Okay, and I have got somebody's paper here that is marked. Does anybody?
Yeah, I think Sarasanta, she left yesterday.
Who
was
this?
That can be used, yes. Can you?
I don't know whose copy this is.
Sarasanta.
Okay. Right. So anybody else do the mountain? Oh, somebody brought a small baby. Huh?
Yes.
Well.
Very small.
Okay. A mountain? Anybody? Tree. Anybody apply the example of the tree today? Actually, I was looking out the window at the trees. And I was thinking how the trees are more merciful than the people and the buildings, and they give more shelter, because the buildings, you cannot go inside. They are locked. But the tree is out there for everyone, and you can always take shelter of the tree. I was just looking at the buildings and the trees, and I said the trees are more merciful than the buildings. Thank you. Wow. Very small baby there. I couldn't sure what it was. What is she holding? Okay, yes?
And maybe about the trees also. That sometimes, like during the winter time, they seem to be like more or less lifeless.
Yes, they appear lifeless.
But every spring they just start to again like bloom. So sometimes when I have these like dry seasons in my like spiritual life, so that's also a little bit comforting.
So as the tree is lifeless in winter, so you see your dry seasons, but then again they bloom in the spring, and so you come through it. Yeah, it's like seasons. And now that made me think about our life now in this body, that we have our spring, and then we have our summer. And now we're kind of in the winter. I'm in the winter, I mean, of my life. Autumn, I don't know if it's autumn or winter, but you start losing your leaves and you start losing your sense of sight, your hearing. Everything starts going, all your senses, one by one, your liver, your your teeth, everything starts going, you know, one by one in the winter of your life. But it's wonderful as devotees that we will, again, we will have our spring in Goloka, Vrindavan. Not like other people, they may have their spring here in this world, but we will go to Krishna. Eternal spring. Then we will have eternal spring in our bodies. Okay, anybody else with a tree? No. The prana. Yes.
That was quite difficult, actually, to think, because it's like inside.
Yeah, the prana is inside.
I was thinking prana in that sense, that when we take prasadam.
Okay, yeah.
So,
when we take prasadam, there is prana.
Yes.
Oh, very good.
And maybe also otherwise, when we cook, then we have, we're supposed to think that we use that kind of ingredients that we have prana in it.
Oh, and something now just came to my mind about prana, that Avadhuta Prabhu is describing how this pranic healer was going over the prasadam. Mm. And he said, there's so much prana in this.
Yeah, maybe that was also something what I start thinking.
Yeah, it's true. It's a lot of prana. I also do pranayama for health too, so that it's different from breathing, because you breathe your air, but prana is when you breathe the essence of everything and then you put it to heal your body. So prana. Anybody else about the prana? Okay, the wind. The lesson of the wind was you blow everywhere, but you are not attached to where you're going through. So we go through situations in our lives, but we are not attached. So do we have some more papers for...
It's there.
Oh, okay. Can you hand to the back of you? There's some new people. Yeah. So they can follow. Here we have a chart. These are our gurus, 24 gurus. Yesterday we did earth, mountain, tree, air, and sky. So now we're on the air, the wind. Nityananda, did you have...
Yeah, I was having to put prana, actually.
Oh, you had with prana, okay.
Yes, I didn't.
All right, no problem.
regulation.
Regulation, okay.
Yeah. And also, like, because we go with Tathagata Prabhu to the seaside.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and take a swim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll ask you about that after class. All right.
Like, as a matter of regulation, it's very nice, you know, because you go out and you do it, you know, just like it says in Prabhupada's purport in Bhagavad Gita, even if it's cold, you go and...
Even if it's cold, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we don't do it in the middle of the winter.
Right. But now it's good, yes.
Yeah, maybe. 8 degrees, okay. Something like that.
8, oh, yeah. Not good. Okay.
So I was thinking, you know, for a matter of regulation, it's nice, mm-hmm. because your mind becomes very peaceful. And also a matter of, you know, life energy.
Yes.
You know, just going down, you know, you get all the sunshine down there and you get fresh air from the sea. You get also just by dipping your, you know, your whole body becomes revitalized.
Yeah, it's the stomach of the universal form, the belly. Hmm. And so because it's the belly, if you take bath in the ocean, then all your diseases of the stomach will be okay if you bathe in the ocean. Okay, anybody else on the wind? Then our last guru for yesterday was the sky. Anybody try to apply that? Yes.
I was remembering this, like sometimes there are some unpleasant circumstances, so then I remembered, okay, now we have to be the observer and not get upset. But I also a little bit failed in this because today was more heavy day on Sankirtan, so at the end I wasn't very happy with how I was doing. But I wasn't getting upset with the people, but more with myself.
Okay, all right. So sometimes you were like practicing the observer on Sankirtan today, and you felt like you have some room for improvement there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, anybody else with the sky? Yes.
I was thinking a little bit about it when we were sitting down having a harinam. And then there was one car driving by, and it almost like drove over all our stuff. So.
Oh, that sounds like a hard day in Harinam.
I was driving very slowly, but
Slowly?
Yeah. I mean, it was like
on purpose.
Out.
Okay.
So, but it was like very, very close to our things. And I was thinking, oh, you know, should I stop playing, do something? But then I thought, no. Anyway, he would probably figure it out. So it was a little stressful, but I tried to just observe what happened.
Yeah.
You continue to play?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you continued to play, although the car was backing, going to back over your harmonium.
Yeah, it was like this distance from me was running.
Yeah, in India they don't notice. They do back, and people have their shops all laid out.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the car starts coming, and people have to bring their shops up. I noticed that when we were out in India.
Yeah.
In India, the cars don't. They're not very observant. Yes. Tapasvini, did you have something about the sky?
I tried to learn like proper kind of behavior from the sky.
Okay.
I didn't remember that it's to be an observer, but I was thinking how to observe in a way that I do my duties properly, but I don't disturb anyone.
Okay. All right.
The sky is very naturally everywhere, but still the sky doesn't demand any attention.
No, you don't notice. We don't. The sky is here, but who notices that the sky is here? Don't notice it. Very good. That's a wonderful application of the sky. Anybody else on the sky? Okay, so now our gurus for today will be water, fire, moon, sun, and pigeon. Very wonderful lessons we'll learn today from these five gurus. Okay, if you think of water, what do you think of? Yes?
It naturally, you know, goes downward.
Flows downward, yes?
Purity.
Purity, yes?
Humility.
Humility. Okay, anything else? If you just think of the word water. Yes?
Taste.
Very good. Yes.
It also has a tendency to form itself according to the vessel.
Okay, it takes the shape of the vessel it's in.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got that. Quenches thirst. Here we've got more. Sustains life. Refreshes. Cleanses. It's transparent also. Pure water is transparent. And it has a pleasing sound when the water falls. And that's really nice. The water goes down. So the water is compared to a saintly person. A saintly person, just like one is cleansed by contact with pure water, by seeing, touching, or hearing a saintly person, a living entity is purified. A saintly person purifies all who come in contact with him because he always chants the glories of the Lord. By studying the nature of water, one can understand the symptoms of a pure devotee. So we have your chart here, and this is for those new people. These are your gurus here. The reference from 11th canto, 7th chapter. What are the lessons? And then cross-reference from Bhagavad Gita. So the saintly person speaks. He is like water because he purifies everyone who comes in contact with him. So he sees everyone like a friend. He sees the whole world as his family. And he walks, he goes through the world. He may be alone, but actually at the same time, he feels like everyone is there as his family. So he's also transparent. So just as pure water is transparent, the saintly person manifests the Supreme Lord from his heart. So in that way, he's also transparent. And the pleasing sound of water is like when the devotee speaks. His words are very charming and pleasing to the heart. So in this way, the devotee is like water, pure devotee, saintly person. So austerity of speech in Bhagavad Gita is to be truthful, not to agitate others, to study the Vedas. This is austerity of speech. So in the 10th canto, there are some other analogies about water. The waterfall. If you study the waterfall, sometimes it's flowing and sometimes it doesn't come down. Especially when I used to live in Goa in India. In the summer, everything was dry. But we lived on the ocean, so it wasn't so bad. But when monsoon came, then There were so many waterfalls coming down from the little small hills and mountains there. So this is compared also to the pure devotee, that sometimes the devotee speaks and sometimes he's silent, according to the capacity of the audience to receive or understand. Sometimes he will speak and sometimes he won't tell his disciple anything. So when he's silent, then you have to worry that he's not talking to you. So, and that was Shudakirti said when Prabhupada was angry. Sometimes he would just shout, sometimes he would just not say a word. And he said it was worse when he didn't speak anything because he didn't know what he was thinking. So from this guru we learn many, many things, that we should be like pure water. Another example or another understanding of water is that you should flow with the ups and downs of life. You should flow like water. You go around, the water also goes around the obstructions and over. It's, you know, you can't stop the water actually from flowing. Of course, if you have a dam, that's one thing. But it goes around, it goes over, and it even eats the rocks that it flows on. So we should speak Krishna Katha, charming, charming speech. Prabhupada had this quality of water that he spoke, and I will give you some examples of how he spoke the philosophy with anyone and everyone. Jagtak Maharaj, he tells a story in the Montreal Temple, 1968. There was one cockroach. You know what the cockroaches are? I think you're afraid of them. Yeah, cockroach. So there was one cockroach in the temple, and Prabhupada picked it up and opened the window and told the cockroach, "Here, I'm giving you the whole world, now enjoy it." And he threw it out the window. Very fortunate cockroach. So that was Srila Prabhupada's, he could talk to a cockroach easily as he could talk to us. Another time, he told Gurudas that if I don't forgive you, then Krishna will forgive you. And if Krishna doesn't forgive you, then Radharani will. Well, that's another example of sweet speech. And I was just researching this now on Chaitanya Charitamrita, that how Radharani is the most merciful. And if you want to go to Krishna, you have to go to Radharani first. You can't go directly because she's in charge. She's the internal energy. So whatever service has to go through Radharani to Krishna. So here's a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. They were walking on Juhu Beach, Bombay. The birds were flying overhead in a perfect formation. And they would make a line, they would turn and follow each other perfectly. So Lokanath Maharaj asked Prabhupada, "How do these birds fly in a perfect formation? How do they communicate with each other?" Prabhupada said, "They are not less intelligent like you." He didn't give us credit. He didn't give us much credit. We couldn't do that in ISKCON. We couldn't all go the same direction. Even when Prabhupada was here, we were going in all different directions. Then another one, they were doing a fire yoga in the opening of Vrindavan Krishna Balaram Temple. In the middle of the sacrifice, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers leaned over to Prabhupada and said, "They're doing it all wrong. They're doing it all wrong." And Prabhupada leaned back and looked at him very calmly and said, "It's all right. They're just practicing." He knew what to say to everyone. And then one time a distressed mother came to Prabhupada and she said, "Why did you take my son from me?" Prabhupada said, "If your son is happy, why would you object?" And she said, "Yeah, you're right." Bhakti Charu Maharaj tells a story that there was one Indian businessman, rich man, and he was challenging Srila Prabhupada. "Why are you building new temples when there are so many old temples in need of repair?" Prabhupada said, "Who is that lady sitting next to you?" The man said, "She's my wife." Prabhupada said, "Well, why did you get married?" No answer. Prabhupada said, "You got married because you wanted to have children. But why have children when there's so many children loitering in the streets? Why not take one of them? Just as you want to have your own child, the devotee wants to build a temple, install the deity, and offer the temple to Krishna." So he had the answer. Nobody, the reporters couldn't defeat him. Yeah, they would try. There was Buddy Narayan was telling, there was one reporter in San Diego, and he was saying, so do you believe the world is flat? And Prabhupada said, well, everywhere I walk, it's flat. Then he said, why is the death rate so high in India? And Prabhupada said, it's the same everywhere, 100%. They couldn't defeat him. Now, Chivika Maharaj, she was a student when he was with Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked, what are you studying in university? He said, sociology. Prabhupada said, well, what does that mean? Well, we study social problems like alcoholism. So Prabhupada said, oh, they study alcoholism, and after they study for the day, they say, okay, now we're finished, let's have a drink. So that's modern education. So that is the, we learn from the water many lessons. So let us review this. You tell me, what are the lessons from water that we learned? One lesson, yes?
To be pure.
Purity, okay. Cleaning, purity, cleansing. Yes?
Transparency.
Sweet speech. Krishna Katha. Okay. Next guru is fire. And we're going to add one thing to your list here, which is not there yet, but first we will do what's on the list. When you think of fire, what do you think of? Heat, okay. Heat. Good. Anything else?
Enthusiasm.
Fire is always very enthusiastic. Yes.
Purity.
Purity, yes. The fire purifies, yes.
Consumes everything.
Good. So that is just what you just said, how the fire consumes everything. The pure devotee consumes all our sinful reactions, just like fire. When you take initiation, then the pure devotee, he burns to ashes all the contaminated things. Now, there's another thing about fire, which you had not mentioned, and that is how the fire is sometimes concealed and sometimes revealed. So just like now in this harmonium, the fire is concealed. If the fire was revealed, then they would burn up the harmonium. In this house, I don't know how much is wood, but if the fire was revealed, I don't know how much of the house would be left here. So therefore, we see fire mostly in its concealed form. That is compared to the super soul. The super soul is sometimes concealed in the heart, and sometimes it is revealed. So the super soul is revealed by the pure devotee. The pure devotee knows how to bring out the super soul and reveal it to everyone. And Prabhupada explains in a purport, by hearing and chanting, then the super soul is revealed. Just like fire is kindled from wood by another fire, divine consciousness of man is kindled by another divine grace. So we have two qualities of fire, two lessons. That the pure devotee is like fire in that he consumes all our sinful reactions. And the pure devotee and the super soul is like fire. It's sometimes hidden and sometimes revealed. Now there's a third thing here, which is not on your chart, which you have to add. Fire is compared to the waves of time. Fire is compared to the waves of time. So the verse is here. Imagine if you had a candle. We have candles, but I don't think you can see them, right? You have like just a candle to burn?
Like I have this mold.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. You can just bring one candle. And so we can get the example of fire. And without the covering, just like plain, it should be. Then everybody can see the flame. So I'll read the verse while she gets ready. So the verse, a flames of a fire appear and disappear at every moment, yet the creation and destruction is not noticed by the ordinary observer. Similarly, the mighty waves of time flow constantly, like the powerful currents of a river, and imperceptibly cause birth, growth, and death of innumerable material bodies. Yet the soul, who is constantly forced to change his position, cannot perceive the actions of time. Now, this is a very small flame. I don't know if you can see it. We have a flame here. Now, can you tell the difference every second, how it's changing? Very difficult to see how the flame is changing. But it's different wax every second, every particle of a second. It's a different wax burning. It's not the same wax. It's different, although it looks the same to us. So the soul is the same, but the body is changing imperceptibly every second, forced by the waves of time. So we don't realize that our body is changing right now. Oh, some cells are being born, some cells are dying. And we don't understand how that's happening. It looks the same. The body looks the same, but actually it's always changing. Of course, the older you get, the more you notice how it's changing. Every day you see different wrinkles and different things. So you see how it's changing. But if you just look at the flame, it looks the same from moment to moment. So the body looks the same, but by the waves of time, the body is changing. Every second, every moment, the body is changing. So these flames is constantly taking birth and dying, actually. Just like our body is constantly being born and dying. But we don't notice it. So the soul actually remains the same. So there are three things we learn from the fire. The devotee is like fire, he purifies. The super soul is hidden, sometimes revealed. And fire is like the waste of time. So how did Prabhupada kick out all our sinful reactions? He wrote a letter to a devotee in Dallas, 1972. You mentioned your pathway has become filled with stumbling blocks, but there are no stumbling blocks. I can kick out all those stumbling blocks immediately, provided you accept my guidance. One stroke of my kick, I can kick out all stumbling blocks. Right. Regarding your questions, you say amongst the elder disciples there are still symptoms of greed, anger, strife, but you are one of them. You are also one of the old students, so you fall in that category also. The fighting is among that group, but not amongst the real workers. There was fighting amongst the gopis also, so we cannot expect there will be some utopia without fighting. There is even in the spiritual sky transcendental greed, lust, envy like that, but that is transcendental. We should never give up our duty. My godbrothers always discourage me, but I do not give up. I am doing my duty, always keeping my spiritual master in front. Even if there is some difficulty or hardship, or even my godbrothers may not cooperate, there may be fighting, still, I must perform my duty to my spiritual master and not become discouraged and go away. That is my weakness. So another time in London, there was one young Brahmacharini, 16 years old. She asked Prabhupada, does Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita in the hellish planets? So you know what Prabhupada thought about London. He said, hellish planets? You don't think London is a hellish planet? He always said London is hell. And somebody told me recently here that you go there and even if not raining, you still feel the water all the time. You feel the moisture in the air. So, Dinobandhu also said, Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasasan in L.A., end of a lecture. He said, if you just follow these four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds, you will go back to home, back to Godhead. I guarantee it. So this is for everybody, not just for Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada will take you back if you follow him. So how the pure devotee purifies. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was a very advanced devotee. So one time he asked Prabhupada, what is more important, sankirtan, rounds, devotional service, or our health? So what do you think Prabhupada said? We got four choices, sankirtan, rounds, devotional service, or health. Yes? Health. Anybody else? All of them? Anybody else? Actually, it's none of them. Prabhupada said, the highest principle is to save yourself. Yeah, another time he said health, and then sadhana, and then service. But he would change. So how to solve problems? Bhargava asked, Prabhupada, sometimes I fight with my godbrothers. Is that bad? Prabhupada said, no, not necessarily. Prabhupada, sometimes I have problems. The spiritual master isn't there and it's too detailed for the scriptures. What should I do? Prabhupada said, if you chant Hare Krishna very nicely, all the answers will come from within. Then another one. So we're showing how Prabhupada used to purify people when he would get angry. And here is when Prabhupada defeated one Mayavadi professor in Caltech. He thought formless is highest, and he was trying to convince Prabhupada. And he was quoting all these Sanskrit verses. Prabhupada was just looking at the Radhakrishna deities and chanting on his beads. Prabhupada finally said, are you finished? So then Prabhupada started quoting from the Puranas, the Vedas, Vedanta, Upanishads, Samhitas, like he was hammering a nail in the ground. The professor was standing, then he stooped a little, then he went on his knees, and then he kind of melted into the ground. And Prabhupada said, do you have any further questions? And the professor said, Swami, can we have kirtan? His complaint was that we just chanted and danced like sentimentalists. So Prabhupada purified him. On a morning walk in Juhu again, Lokanath Maharaj was asked by Prabhupada, what kind of berries are growing on the side of the road? And Lokanath Maharaj said, oh, these... This has a certain name, and great yogis perform meditation and live only on these berries. So Prabhupada said, yes, our men should learn how to do this. Chant Hare Krishna, eat a few berries, and once in a week go to the village and beg a chapati. And the devotees were looking at each other because sometimes Prabhupada would give instructions that would change everyone's life forever, like go to China or who knows what. So a few of the devotees said, Prabhupada, we have to preach, we have to perform our activities. Prabhupada said, no, you should learn to do this. Chant Hare Krishna, eat a few berries, sit in the forest. Once a week, go down to the village and beg some chapati. And all the devotees were silent, thinking, my God, we might have to do this. Only Lokanath Maharaj was happy, because he was naturally austere. And Prabhupada said, this is saintly. This is the life of a sadhu. So, yeah, one time that happened when I first joined in the first 6 months. Somebody somehow thought Prabhupada said, for lunch, you're only supposed to have two chapatis and a little dal. So for a couple of weeks, that was our diet. And breakfast was 8 chickpeas, raw. Yeah, somehow. I don't think they were cooked. They tasted pretty raw. They were wet. Maybe they were soaked overnight, I think. And then we had to eat them with salt and ginger or something. I don't know. That was breakfast. So for 2 weeks we had this diet because someone overheard and Prabhupada said, no, I never said that. For 2 weeks we were like, oh. That used to happen a lot. So we actually, for the first guru, water, and the second guru, fire, the question is how to apply it to our lives in Krishna consciousness. First, water. If we want to, tomorrow, so our homework is to try to choose one of these gurus and apply it to your life, the lesson you learned from this guru to your life tomorrow. So how could we apply this lesson of water to our lives tomorrow in the day? What could we do? How could we practice this, what we learned from water?
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can avoid the tendency of my way or no way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So very nice idea. Avoid the tendency of my way or no way. Anything else we could do tomorrow? My way or no way. Yes. Speak sweetly. Krishna Katha. Any other ideas what we can do? Yes.
That's one spiritual master, I don't remember, said about water that water could be like as nectar, that nectar flows downwards, so the more humble you are, the more you get nectar.
Okay, so water is like nectar, it flows downwards, so the more humble you are, the more nectar you get. Very good, very good. Also, I've heard that the more dependent you are, so the mercy flows to one who is the most dependent, so water can flow to, like when you... chant like you're crying like a child for its mother, then Krishna might hear you more than somebody who's just mechanically chanting the holy name. Any other ideas about water?
No.
Yeah.
Try to be more sensitive.
Try to be more sensitive, okay. Be more sensitive. Very good. Fire. What's that? Oh, translating. How can we apply the lessons of fire to our life tomorrow in Krishna consciousness? Because we don't want this to be a theoretical class. It has to be practical, realized knowledge. And when we apply what we hear, it becomes realized.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the principle of sacrifice, that the Lord becomes manifest when we engage in endeavoring for Him.
Good. The principle of sacrifice, fire is compared to sacrifice, fire sacrifice, or the principle of sacrifice. So the Lord becomes manifest, what was it?
When we endeavor for Him.
Okay. Endeavor for Krishna tomorrow. Any other way we can apply the lesson of fire to our lives? Yes.
I was thinking that, explain about the land, how to see the world to be, like, all is changing. There's nothing constant to hold on to. Actually, it just seems to be constant.
Okay, we can view the world as always changing every second, every moment. Moment by moment, the world is changing. So, not to be attached, but to identify with Krishna, which is constant. Krishna is constant. Very good. Very nice application of fire. Okay, anybody else on fire? Mm-hmm.
So Prabhupada lit the flame of Krishna consciousness, which has become very big. So when the devotees are serving and preaching, they are bringing in more firewood.
Okay. Oh, very interesting analogy. Prabhupada lit the fire of Krishna consciousness, and when devotees bring more people in, then they're bringing more firewood for Krishna's fire. That's wonderful. And we are like a spark of fire, but some of us have fallen on the ground. Everybody in this world has fallen on the ground, actually. And if you've fallen on the wet grass, it takes longer. And if you've fallen on the dry grass, then you quickly can ignite your Krishna consciousness. We are all sparks, and we're meant to join the original fire of Krishna. Very good. So our next guru is the moon. The lessons we are learning from these gurus, there's a lot of lessons of detachment. It's very similar to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita about the soul. So Uddhava Gita is similar in that way, but it's a little bit more advanced. So now we will hear about the moon and also about how we're not this body. But before we do that, when you think of the moon, what do you think of? Yes.
It's very pleasing to see.
Pleasant, pleasing.
Yeah, I was thinking beauty also.
Beauty. Yes.
No, I had soothing.
Soothing. Soothing. Yeah, I just got somebody wrote on Facebook a beautiful verse about the moon. It's Manomaya. It's pleasing to the mind because it's the deity of the mind, actually, is the moon. And then it's Sarvamaya because it's all-pervading and pleases everyone. And so many mayas. I can't remember all the others. Manomaya, Sarvamaya. Amritamaya. It gives nectar for the plants and for people. Amritamaya. Good. Okay. So how is it like the soul is like the waxing and the waning moon? So just as the waxing and waning of the moon does not affect the moon, the changes of body do not affect the soul. But that's the lesson we learned from the moon. So six changes, birth, growth, maintenance, byproducts, dwindling, and death. So the moon is like that. It appears to grow and diminish and finally disappear. But the moon remains the same. So how can we perceive ourselves as not changing like the body? How can you understand, what is your realization that the soul does not change? Does anybody have any realization of that while you're living in this body? Anybody, or is there a way that you can understand this point, that the soul is not, the body is changing, but the soul is not, is our practical way to actually understand this.
My grandma always.
Your grandma?
That, yeah, she said that that she is the same person. Like
yes.
She always loved to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And she always felt that she wants to dance, and she was like moving a bit, but she could not move a lot because she was ill.
Right.
So, but that sense, she was just laying down.
Right.
And when we listened to music, and she was very smart, but she couldn't move a lot.
Okay.
So
her grandmother had the same desires. That she understood that she was the same, but the body. Wasn't the body just does not follow the mind when you get old. When you're small, the body follows the mind everywhere. And when you get old, sometimes you forget. Your mind is still very fast, but your body, and then your body does, and you, what did I do? You know, you run down the stairs, you forget, and when you get to the bottom, your knees are finished. So yeah, that's how I told. I was sitting next to a lady on the airplane, and she was expressing that same thing. Oh, I have all these desires, but now because I'm older, I cannot fulfill them. I said, that's the proof that you're different from your body. Because you still have the same desires you had as when you were young, but you can't fulfill them. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? He never seemed old. As I said yesterday, we would follow him on the morning walk, and he would be in his 70s, and we would be in our 20s, and he would walk so fast, and we couldn't figure it out with our intelligence. We would just look at him, and that was me anyway. I was trying to figure out, how does he do it? In the class too, I would just like look at him and try to figure out, is he there now, here? Is he here, or is he in some other dimension? Because he looked like he was in kind of another dimension when you looked at him, like a film, a video, like not exactly he was there, but he looked like he was coming from some other dimension. But I could never figure him out with my intelligence. It was then I realized only by devotion can you understand spiritual things. So Prabhupada, in France, Paris, they brought a religious psychiatrist, well known in France, who took care of his patients through spiritual life and showed how spiritual life would help them. So the man came downstairs. They called him to visit Prabhupada, but he wouldn't go see Prabhupada. So then he left. So we told Prabhupada, I invited him to come to see you, but he said, where is the patient? He had misunderstood. He thought we asked him to come and treat some sadhu. When he realized there was no patient, he left. So Prabhupada laughed and laughed, and he said he didn't realize he was the patient. So, this is modern psychology. So a reporter asked Prinanda Maharaj. No, Prinanda Maharaj told this about a reporter. I was there for this, actually. It was a TV program in Gainesville. The reporter on the TV interviewer, he said, isn't it old people that take sannyas in India? Why are you giving sannyas to young people? So Prabhupada asked, what does it mean to be old? No answer. Prabhupada said, old means about to die. Can you say I'm older than you? Can you say you are not going to die before me? Therefore, we are giving them sannyas. Now, that was Prabhupada's psychology. So from the moon we learn again to be unaffected by the transformations of the body, waxing and waning. Now some of our bodies are waxing and some of our bodies are waning. So in both instances we should not be affected and know that we are different. So how can we apply this to our lives tomorrow, the lesson of the moon? It's very similar to the lesson of fire, yes?
I was thinking about that, some realizations I had that the soul was different than the body.
Soul different than the body.
It's like, sometimes you go through like sensations of extreme sensations, like you break your arm or something.
Oh, right, okay.
It hurts like anything.
You go through extreme pain or different things.
Yeah. sometimes I've also been intoxicated, but like.
And you were intoxicated.
But sometimes.
Before you were a devotee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but somewhere you're always, you know, you're always yourself.
Yes, you're always the same person, even though sometimes you were intoxicated, sometimes you had pain.
Yeah, sometimes. Like, so you're always somewhere, you know that I'm me and that just something happens.
You know you're me, right, okay,
so,
good.
So try to apply that, you know.
Try to apply that.
Consciousness, even, you know, you may not break your arm, but you still understand it.
Yeah.
It's just happening around.
Yeah, one devotee in one of my seminars recently, she said she had this experience that they had to do an operation on both of her arms. So the first arm they did, and it was extremely painful, and she could hardly tolerate it because so many injections and things. And then after 2 weeks, they were supposed to do the second arm. So she said, oh, this time I'm going to make an experiment. I'm going to chant Hare Krishna and try to just concentrate on the chanting. And she did it, and she didn't feel any pain, she said, the second time. So try to remember that next time you have some pain. Okay, any other applications on the moon? What can we do tomorrow? If not, then we will go... Yes, one more.
You can try to kind of soothing demeanor.
Soothing demeanor. Yeah, because so many people in the world, they have the opposite. They're so much in anxiety. They're in great anxiety, anxious demeanor. So if we just have a soothing demeanor, of course, they might stop you in security thinking there's something wrong with you if you smile. Yeah, so... because I'm always thinking about the airport. But if you're old, you can do anything. They don't mind. If you're old, you can smile because they think, oh, some batty old lady. Okay, so next is the sun. When you think of the sun, what are the qualities of the sun you think of? Yes.
Sustains,
okay.
Light.
So you can see, right. We depend on the sun to see.
Power.
Very powerful, yeah. I just again saw on Facebook they're worried about a huge flare coming off the sun. And they said if this flare hits the earth, then all of the computers will be destroyed. And the internet, and we will go back to the 15th century, they say. I just saw that today. They're very worried about this now. That any time one of these flares could hit the earth, and we will go back to the 15th century. That's the time of Lord Chaitanya, isn't it? That would be good. they're fearful that the whole system will be finished. And what will they do? Yes.
Sun is giving energy and light.
Energy and light from the sun?
Everybody.
To everybody? Good.
Sun is constant.
Sun is constant, yes. That's one of the qualities, yes.
I was thinking sun is teacher.
Yeah, well, that's what we're learning now.
Yeah.
So what do you learn from the sun?
I don't know, but Krishna's book.
Oh, you'll find out.
Krishna's book, Bhagavad Gita, to the sun.
Oh, right, okay,
the sun god was teaching Hanuman.
Okay, sun god was teaching Hanuman. Also, Ikshvaku, yes?
Sun is equal.
Sun is equal, good. That's a nice analogy. So I'll give you some things from Bhagavatam about the sun. Sun enlivens all living entities with his unlimited heat and light. Now, here's one thing you didn't mention about the sun. Time. From the sun, we count our time. So he diminishes the duration of life of all living entities in order to release them from their illusion of material attachment. And he enlarges the path of elevation to the heavenly kingdom. So we hear from Bhagavatam, with every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost, except for the devotees who are hearing Krishna Katha. Now, Lord Shiva prays to the sun. He says in Bhagavatam, the sun is purna, as somebody said, constant, because the rays from the sun have no end, millions and millions of years. He's shining without end. He's constant, without diminution. In fact, it's getting worse, because the scientists are worried about it. worried about the sun coming over here a little bit. If it just moves 1 inch out of its path, then we're finished. So the word Paramahansa is also a name for the sun. Because when Prabhupada says, when there's sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. In other words, the sun god helps the mind of the living entity to become situated on the platform of Paramahansa. The sun sterilizes all unclean things, so he keeps everything sterilized, especially dirty things in the mind. So these are all for the sun. So I can imagine here when you have lack of sunlight in the winter, it must be very distressing to people. Yes, tamagun. Is there more suicide and in the winter? So this is the proof that the sun helps, actually. It helps people to be purified. Now, what is the lesson we will learn now? The first lesson, as the sun evaporates large quantities of water by its potent rays, later returns the water to the earth in the form of rain. Similarly, a saintly person accepts all types of material objects with his material senses, and at the appropriate time, when the proper person has approached him to request them, he returns such material objects. Thus, both in accepting and giving up the objects of the senses, he is not entangled. So as the son accepts things and then he gives them back, so the saintly person accepts things from people and then he returns them to the people. So Prabhupada, we'll hear about this later. Of course, Prabhupada had that the prasad distribution he wanted. He would get from people donation and he would give prasad distribution. So we give the books, Prabhupada's books, Harinam, free of charge. The second lesson of the sun is the sun is reflected and never divided. So we see the sun may be in different objects of water, the lake, but although it's divided, it's the same sun. Another example from Bhagavad Gita, the purport, Prabhupada says, the sun is in Finland, the sun is in England, the sun is in America, but they're not different suns, it's the same one sun. So Super Soul is in the heart of the Finnish people, in the heart of the English people, but it's the same Super Soul. It's the heart of the Muslims, the heart of the Hindus, same Super Soul in everyone. So that is how the sun is not divided, so Super Soul is not divided. And also a saintly person, he is reflected in many objects or situations, but he's never divided. He's single-minded in purpose. So the question is, sometimes we get things, and I think you were mentioning that yesterday, that you have things on your shelf and you don't use them. So how do we know when to give something up? We have things that we don't use, or how do we know when to give it up? Because it says we accept and then we give up. So how do we know, actually? Yes?
When it becomes cumbersome?
When it becomes a burden, okay, cumbersome. Any other ideas? When do we know to give up things that we have?
In the time of need.
Okay, if somebody needs them, then we give them. Okay. Any other way to tell when to give things up? Yes?
If we don't know how to connect them to Krishna.
If we don't know how to connect them to Krishna. Oh, very good. It's a Krishna conscious answer. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Sometimes Prabhupada would take, and sometimes Prabhupada would give. Mostly he would give. But sometimes he took, like in the beginning, Brahmananda gave his whole life savings, $5,000, to Prabhupada. And then when he gave it, he was looking at the Bhagavatam, three Bhagavatam, and he was asking, Prabhupada, may I have these books? So Prabhupada said, that will be extra. So Brahmananda said, to get that $16 was much more difficult than the other $5,000 he got before. The Prabhupada knew how to... He was expecting Prabhupada would give him the books for free for his $5,000 donation. Now, one big businessman in Delhi came to visit Prabhupada. Swamiji, I have a factory here in Delhi. I have a factory in Jaipur. I have so many things. I have all this, but I cannot sleep at night. Prabhupada said, you can't sleep because you have so many things. Give them to me and you can sleep peacefully. And he turned to the devotee, take his address. The man said, no, Swamiji, I can come anytime. Prabhupada said, you can come anytime, but we should also be able to go to you anytime. Take his address. No, Swamiji. Prabhupada, if you give some of your things to Krishna, you will be peaceful. We will relieve you of your problem. The man was smashed right there, and he gave his address. He had to. So sometimes Prabhupada would take, sometimes he would give. When he left London, he had so many gifts, and he just gave away everything to the devotees when he left there. Shri Kirti tells a story that he was in Los Angeles sleeping in the servants' quarters, and he had the stove, gas stove on to keep warm. And he would just sleep on the floor on a mat with his chadar. So Prabhupada came and saw him, and he said, why are you keeping the stove on at night? He said, well, the warmth of the fire helps me sleep because it's so cold. So Prabhupada said, well, don't you have a blanket? No, Srila Prabhupada, I usually don't need one. Prabhupada said, all right, go into my cabinet and pick out any blanket and sweater you like. So he said, I enthusiastically hurried over to the metal closet, and I took the thickest, most colorful quilt I could find. And I helped myself to one of his saffron sweaters. And I returned to Prabhupada and showed him my choices. He smiled and nodded his head. All right, now you can go. I offered my obeisances and left the room, considering myself to be the most fortunate soul in the world. I used the blanket every night, feeling enveloped in Srila Prabhupada's love. It kept me spiritually warm. One day, I was talking with one of my friends, Brahma Rupa Das. He asked if I wanted to take rest in the temple room that night with some of the other devotee men. I agreed. Always being alone, it sounded adventuresome. When I went into the temple room, I brought my beautiful bright orange quilt with me. It had a shiny silk finish on one side and a more cuddly soft finish on the other. When I walked in the temple room, Brahma Rupa's eyes opened wide. Where did you get that? He asked. So Srila Prabhupada gave it to me. I said, do you want it? Feeling guilty about owning something so precious. Yes, he eagerly replied. So I gave it to him. A week later, I was back in the servant quarters and Prabhupada came in. He noticed, where is the blanket I gave you? Feeling ashamed, I quietly answered, oh, one of the devotees saw it, and when I told him it was yours, he became so excited, I just had to give it to him. All right, get yourself another blanket, he calmly said, and this time, do not give it away, he added with a little more emotion. Again, I happily complied and helped myself to another prasadam blanket. So he said, sometimes Prabhupada would give me sweaters and different chadars, but I never managed to keep any of them. I would feel selfish. A devotee would find out it was Prabhupada's, and I would feel, oh, I better just give it away. I would just give it to them. He said, I felt guilty. While traveling with Prabhupada, I kept very little for myself. I didn't think it was practical to have so many belongings. I was the one that wasn't practical, so now he regrets that he gave everything away. But he has Prabhupada. You can, if you meet Shuddha Kirti, you can just feel the presence. Yes?
But he still has this one great chadar.
Yes, yeah, he got it. Yeah, he got it. He has one. Yeah, he got it.
I got the blessings from that chadar.
Oh, yeah, he got one. Yeah, he got one chadar. Yeah. He got that back. Actually, his wife had it for a few years, and he didn't get it back. And then finally, somehow, she gave it back to him. I mean, his ex-wife, yeah. But now he has it. So in America, in Boston, all devotees rushed to meet him in 69. And one disciple came with a little gift wrap box. All he had was a sweater that his parents had sent him for his birthday. So someone opened the box, and it was a very cheap synthetic sweater. But Prabhupada said, oh, this is very nice. A devotee apologized, oh, Prabhupada, it's just a gift from my parents. So Prabhupada pulled off his own sweater, a beautiful, silky Scottish cashmere sweater he got in London. He gave it to the devotee, and he took the cheap sweater and put it on, like Sudama Vipra or something. And so that devotee was so moved, he started crying. You know, Prabhupada, he always gave more to us than we were able to give to him. And he was not attached. I know one of my god sisters, when she got married, Prabhupada had 2 gold rings. He gave one to her and one to her husband for the marriage. So they had gold, because they were in India, they had nothing. You know, we had nothing in India. So here we have the sun, lesson of the sun. So how can we apply the lesson of the sun to our lives tomorrow in Krishna consciousness? Yes?
Another place in Jyotis mentioned that sun is representing the soul.
Sun is representing the soul.
Sun is malefic, it's not...
In Jyotish.
Uh-huh. In Jyotis, it's
Jyotish is malefic.
To be,
right.
Like, so why is that? It's because this material world is a strange place for the soul. So that's why sun...
Okay. Interesting. From Jyotish, that the sun is considered a malefic. Not a friendly planet, because here in the material world it's not a friendly place for the soul. And when you said that, I was thinking also how it's malefic in one sense, that it diminishes the duration of our life also as time. So in that sense, people can see it malefic, but of course for the devotees everything is good, so even that is good for devotees. Okay, any other way we can apply? Yes. Krishna consciousness. Yes? Sun is spreading its light to one and all, so?
The devotee can spread Krishna consciousness.
Devotee can spread Krishna consciousness. Very good. As the sun gives it the water back, distributes the water. As rain. So that's a nice analogy, how the devotees are compared to rain clouds in 10th canto, 20th chapter. And what happens when the cloud gives all its rain, then the cloud is dissipated, it's finished. So the devotees are like the cloud, they give all of everything, their whole life for everyone. And even if it's finished, they don't mind. They give their last breath for mankind, like Srila Prabhupada did. He was the example. Any other ways we can apply the lesson of the sun to our life? Yes?
The sun is always moving.
Sun is always moving.
So it can also be active.
It can be active, okay. All right. And in Krishna consciousness, of course. Okay, good. Not like the monkeys in Vrindavan. We're also always active. Yes. That is active, what is that? Active foolishness probably calls it. We should be actively intelligent, but not actively foolish. So our last guru for today is the pigeon. And the lesson we will learn is excessive affection causes suffering. The female and male pigeon were so attracted to each other, they couldn't tolerate a moment's separation. The pigeon could not control his senses, and the female got pregnant, and she delivered eggs, and the baby pigeons were born, and they raised their children. Seeing their children happy, the parents were happy. Then a hunter, spreading his net, captured the young pigeons, moving about near their nest. The lady pigeon became overwhelmed with anguish and rushed towards her children. Being in the grip of the illusory energy, she forgot herself and was captured in the hunter's net. The male pigeon began to lament, "Why should I live if my wife and children are dead?" Then his mind went blank and he fell into the hunter's net. So what does this mean, excessive affection? It's not that we should renounce love of family and friends and all things material, but we need to see the love in proper perspective. That Krishna should be in the center of our family, and the spiritual element and everything should be done for Krishna. And we can see that here, examples in this place where I'm living. Here is a perfect example of this, how Krishna is the center. We've got a forest of tulsis in this Grihastha ashram here. So you feel like you're living in the temple. This is an ashram here. So this is the example of how to behave in Krishna consciousness. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Often devotees would try to imitate Prabhupada. and be like Prabhupada. So here's one example of one, my god sister, Swamiji. When I chant Hare Krishna, can I pray for all living entities? Prabhupada said, you? Do you know all living entities? No. You pray to Krishna. Let Krishna take care of all living entities. So then another, and Prabhupada often would talk about how we belong to the family of Krishna. Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta Gotra. So Krishna, he has come here to show us how we can have family life eternally. How we can enjoy eternally. That Krishna has his father, his mother, his friends, his lovers. So if we go to Krishna's family, then we don't have to come back to this temporary family. He said, you like family, so I've got my family. I'm not impersonal. You can also be my friend. You can be my wife. You can be my lover. You can be my father, mother. Why are you rotting here? And you go and do that with Krishna. So in the early days of Krishna consciousness, we felt very much like we were part of a family. That one devotee, she tells her experience of coming the first day to the temple in Washington, D.C. Her name is Sumati. She knocked on the door, and the door opened, and one young lady was there. And she said to her, "Welcome home." And then she opened the door and said, "Come, let me show you your father." She showed her a picture of Srila Prabhupada. "And let me show you your grandfather." And she showed a picture of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And then she said, "And here's your brothers and sisters. And you can live here for the rest of your life. All you have to do is bring your toothbrush and you can stay here." So she thought about it. She went home, and the next day she showed up with her toothbrush, and she came to the temple president and said, "I want to stay here for the rest of my life. I brought my toothbrush." So he said, "Do you know the four regulative principles?" And he told her, and she was a chain smoker, actually, until that day. And he said, "So do you think you can follow that?" And she said, "I think so." And she joined, and she's still here to today. Yeah. 40 years later, more than 40 years. So this is Krishna's family. Now, how do we know? Now, this is, how do we know if we're having excessive affection? Because now a lot of us are in the Grihastha ashram. How do we actually tell? How can we tell if we're going over the line? Yeah?
It's quite painful.
It becomes painful, okay? Yeah, when it becomes painful, then you're doing something wrong. Yes.
Hampering your practice of sadhana.
If it's hampering your practice of sadhana, okay, then you're having excessive affection in the wrong direction. Okay, any other ways to tell if you're having excessive affection? I can tell you from my own experience that at one point my son was doing, you know, going away from Krishna consciousness and doing things that I never thought he would do. And so then I started to get sick because of that. So that's excessive affection. When you worry so much, you get sick. Because then I realized, wait a minute. Okay, he might be wanting to do it, but why should I also become down at the same time? I said, why should I go follow him? You know? And then when I became more positive, then he also became more positive, I found too. That it was a good. We should realize when we go over the line that not to be overly worried and anxious, because Krishna is in control and everybody has their free will. To even our children are born in Krishna consciousness. They have to decide for themselves. They have to make their own choice. Yes.
And sometimes when it feels like this, that bad to. Because of somebody else, and then it's a sign we don't trust. We are not trusting Krishna that Krishna is ready. So sometimes I've noticed that when I stop doing anything, that other people start to go towards Krishna. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Any other ideas on this? And yes.
This is kind of like.
like hard lesson to learn that you cannot really like force love.
You cannot force love, right. That's right. Krishna doesn't force us. So, I mean, Krishna is not forcing us to love him. And so we cannot force anyone either. So how can we apply... Yes, go ahead.
A few years back, my father became very sick. And I wrote to my spiritual master about this. So then he wrote me that I should pray to Krishna, that you should pray to me. Mm. I should pray to Krishna that he will give me the strength to maintain Krishna consciousness in all circumstances without being too much attached to temporary.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's very nice to have that pray to Krishna so we don't become so too attached. Yeah, there was this, it was funny, when I was doing these Bhagavad Gita cards in Nepal. The brahmacharis are so attached to their mothers and their families. Some of them want to go back. So one of them asked the question to the Bhagavad Gita cards, should I go back to my family? He got renunciation. So it's not an easy lesson, actually. It's hard. I mean, for the West it's easier because... we just leave our parents anyway. But in India, they're very attached. Still to their families. Very attached. Nepal more, because India is more advanced now. They do get married and leave their families. But in Nepal, it's more orthodox. More behind in the times. Okay. So how can we apply the lesson of the pigeon to our lives tomorrow in Krishna consciousness? Yes.
That we can try to trust Krishna more.
Oh, good. Try to trust Krishna more in your life. When things happen, just trust him. And understand, I had such a beautiful letter here. I could read it to you. Any other ideas? Yes.
To be conscious of the movements of our minds.
To be conscious of the movements of our minds. Okay? Anybody else? Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes?
I have one comment about the sun.
The sun?
Yeah. I like to think about, you know, how the sun is everywhere, just like super soul is everywhere. So then, you know, if you think from the perspective of the sun, you know, it's a great perspective. And then think about the transcendental perspective of the super soul. It's like the ultimate perspective. It can be everywhere, and it's not hampered by any like obstacle. The sun, you know, it doesn't hit the back of the earth planet. But the super soul has the ultimate perspective.
The sun compared to the super soul in regards to perspective.
Yeah.
Good. Any other comments or questions? Yes.
One comment came, what came in my mind about this moon, that if when we are asking from Guru, when our mind says different things that maybe it's right or wrong or anything, and then we ask from our Guru that is it right or wrong, and Balaram is the ultimate spiritual master, and it's like the moon, it's like the color of Balaram's skin, and then the sky is blackish blue, like the clouds, and then the stars are like the some kind of jewels on Balaram's clothes. So
interesting. Okay, very poetic description. The sky? Yes?
I was thinking about this, the example of pigeon.
Pigeon.
How excessive affection causes suffering. So mainly people are not aware of it.
Yeah.
They think it's very normal. Mm-hmm. It's like completely new information for them.
Yeah.
So I think this example is a good, good way to enthuse us to preach people to at least be brahmachari for some time, even though they may have the affection and attachment, but then they can have experience of this and then maybe again go back to...
Yeah, previously actually Brahmacharya Ashram was meant for renounced and for those who are going to become grihasthas at the same time. It was for both, to train both of them. That even for grihasthas, they had to be brahmacharis first. And they would be the best grihasthas because they were brahmacharis first. And they're really more responsible. Yeah. That's in first canto purport, that it is for two types of people, brahmacharya ashram. Yeah. Good. But don't give the example to any Indian family or else they won't come back. One of my friends in Belfast, he was preaching to an Indian couple with their children, how they're not the body and everything's temporary, and they left very quickly. They didn't even take prasadam. I hope. This is not so time, place, and circumstance. Yes.
I heard in a class by His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami that in Sri Sampradaya, this Sarva Dharma Paritya verse is considered like the ultimate verse, like for the sannyasis. Many like people from there are afraid if you say aloud that verse. Although for us, it's one of the first verses.
Yeah, it's the beginning for us. Yeah, it's the first step in self-realization for us. In some, I think Tamil Nadu and in Malaysia, they are afraid to worship Krishna. Because, especially if he has a flute in his hand. Because if you hear the sound of the flute, you may forget everything and leave everything and follow him. they know. They understand. Oh, I want to read something I forgot to tell you about this pigeon thing. The proper way to feel excessive affection for Krishna. So here is another Vrindavan guru of Satchinandan Swami, a dog. This is a dog that was a guru for Satchinandan. It was not his Diksha guru, but someone asked me, did he take Diksha from this dog? I said, no. But he learned in this spirit of 24 gurus. He said, one morning, as I peacefully chanted my japa, I heard him for the first time. He was moaning with heart-rending intensity. The cry came from somewhere before the iron gate at the back of our ashram. There was something intense, almost human, in his moaning, which made me get out of my room at once to see if I could help. But when I opened the gate and looked for him, he had gone. The next morning, he was back, wailing even louder. This time I found him. He was middle-sized, and his head was pointed beyond Radha Kund towards the direction of Lalita Kund. He was sobbing, whining, wailing. He was beside himself with grief. He had melted the hearts of two monkeys who are usually quite self-centered. They had come over and they were trying to comfort him by caressing his neck and head, mumbling some encouragement into his ears, one into the left and the other into the right. The scene was soul-stirring. So in Vrindavan, the monkeys and dogs are enemies. The dogs chase and bite the monkeys. So this was quite amazing that these monkeys were comforting this dog. The pitiable cry of this dog was raw emotion expressing an absolute need which couldn't tolerate any further delay. When he noticed that I was watching him through the pattern of the back gate, he quickly composed himself, clearly embarrassed by my intrusion, and left. No mistake, I saw tears in his eyes. A few days passed, no dog. Then I met him again, this time in the temple of Radha Gopinath, at the end of the circumambulation path around Radha Kund. He sat quietly before the deities. Only those beautiful tears glittered in his eyes. This time, I did not want to disturb him and spoil his ecstasy. Standing before the temple, I realized the first time I had seen him with his monkey friends, he had looked over the two lakes directly towards the temple. There was no doubt about the address of his crying. This dog is one of my gurus who confirmed a teaching of Srila Prabhupada. The only price for Krishna consciousness are your sincere tears, tears shed out of longing for the king and queen of Vrindavan Forest, Shri Shri Radha Krishna. Here is the dog. I don't know if you can see him. He's just a normal black dog with tilak. Raj, all the dogs have tilak. Most of them. They have white tilak like this. And there are some other dogs belonging to a different sampradaya who have the Shamananda tilak like this. A whole litter of them were just born behind our house that have the Shamananda tilak. These are fallen devotees who didn't make it. But the Prabhupada said dogs, hogs, and monkeys are fallen devotees who committed an offense to the Dham. But in this life, they will go straight back to Godhead. Okay, so we will stop here. You have 5 gurus to choose from: sun, moon, and fire, water, and pigeon. So try to apply to your life tomorrow, Krishna consciousness.